5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Future Forum Online. This is March, Women's History Month, and we're exploring the future history of women through a series of conversations with women from around the world, working at the global or international level. I'm Claire Nelson, your host, and I'll be speaking today to Professor Kathy Matsui. Dr. Kathy Matsui is a professor of global citizenship at Seisen University in Tokyo, Japan. But more importantly, for our purposes, she's very engaged in the international movements around peace in the faith community. Most recently, she was the president, former president, of the International Association for Liberal Religious Women, and currently remains a special member of the board. So I'm delighted to have with us Professor Kathy Matsui to share some insight on her vision of the future. So welcome, Professor. Thank you for agreeing to this, be a part of this conversation. How are you?
I'm very fine. Thank you very much, and I'm very honored to be here with you.
Yeah, so I was really intrigued. I had not heard about this organization before. I was very familiar with the word Parliament of Religions, but I hadn't heard of this group, the International Association of Liberal, and I know the use of the word liberal. So tell me why this organization and why the special use of the term liberal in your name.
Oh, I see. Well, this organization was established about 104 years ago. It was established in 1910, and it's one of the oldest women's interfaith organizations.
Wow.
And we strive to provide a link between liberal religious women throughout the world. Our activities focus on economic and social justice, as well as equality for women. And most of all, we work for world peace.
Yes. Yes, I noticed that, and I was very interested. So as women in this organization, are typically the members of this organization are in leadership in their own faith communities, or as spiritual leaders, or as they're like just in the pews. Which ones are they both in the membership?
What do you mean by?
Well, you know, like some. In other words, is the organization made up only of like ministers and imams and priests?
I see what you mean. You don't really have to be a leader as long as you're a member of a religious tradition.
Okay, got you.
Right, so anybody is welcome, whether there are groups or whether they're individuals.
Okay, so about how many members would you say you have around the world?
Oh, at the moment, since it is a very old organization, we've been losing our old members, and we're trying to get new young members. At the moment, I think we have about 150.
Okay, so we have a lot of work to do to bring this
community.
Yes.
That's right.
So are you, I noticed that you have been at a lot of the interfaith conferences around the world, like the International Association for Religious Freedom. What's the relationship between the two organizations?
Oh, I see. The International Association of Religious Freedom was established earlier than IALRW, and so IALRW sort of branched out of this organization. We work very closely together. Right.
Gotcha. Okay, which would make sense because perhaps you found that you were more of the men speaking and you had to have your own space. I understand.
Well, yes, that's true too. Most of our members are also members of IARF, but we feel the importance of coming together as women so that we can focus and prioritize our activities on women and children.
Okay. So now, on your personal level, you're a professor of global citizenship. I don't know anybody, I've never heard of a professor in that era before.
That's right. It's a very new area. It's very similar to peace education.
Yes. So what has been the experience in establishing that discipline, that area of study?
We thought that it was very important to develop women. It's a women's university, and to develop citizens with that kind of responsibility and role in mind to change or make transformation that affects ways of thinking, worldviews, values, etc., because this world needs really a big change yet. It's sort of like the challenging part is to change the social system based on patriarchy. So,
yes,
so we want to build women leaders with these ideas in mind so that they can work actively in the society to make these changes.
Now, this is very exciting. Does your Center for Global Citizenship have partnerships and exchanges with other universities teaching similar programs?
Yes. There will be probably other programs that focus on conflict resolution or international relations, etc.
But that's not quite the same, because the traditional international relations disciplines don't quite mean the same thing as global citizenship.
That's right.
So my question is, how are you partnering with other groups in global citizenship? That's a very specific area.
I see. Well, actually, we do partner. For example, there are other universities in Japan that focus on global issues.
Yes.
So we partner with them as well. We also send students to different parts of the world to do field work, to actually have a hands-on experience on various global issues at that particular area. For example, Malawi or Indonesia or Philippines.
Yes, that's very interesting. Now, how can your work in the Center of Global Citizenship dovetail with your leadership in an international organization such as the IALRW or the IARF? How do you think that, because what you're doing is really very transformative in terms of training the next of graduates who are going to go to work in NGOs or corporate sector, and this is exactly what is needed. So how can those two, let's say, fields dovetail in order to promote more rapidly the uptake of this kind of training?
So it basically, in other words, you think you're talking about how we can connect the education that the students get at SACEN, plus connected to the activities of IALRW. Actually, some of our students are members of IALRW as well. So especially, for example, we have Muslim students and Buddhist Christians, and we're trying to sustain our organization by having these young women come over and actually do some activities on peace based on women's issues.
Now, in the U.S., there has been for some time the interest of trying to establish a Department of Peace. It hasn't gone far, but in terms of your work at the International Association of Religious Women, have there been any direct initiatives being made to governments, for example, to set up officially?
Actually, what we're trying to do is, maybe it's not very direct, but number one, we're trying to get the connections through ECOSOC to have membership there. And secondly, we also deal with activities on inspired by the UN, you know, Security Council Resolution 1325. Have you heard of this resolution?
No, I haven't. Could you explain that?
Well, yeah, it's a resolution that was passed in the Security Council, and it's a resolution that protects human dignity and mutuality in decision making, and the important part is the equal participation of women in decision making areas for the advancement, because most cases, world crisis is resolved without having women in the decision making table, right?
So, yes, definitely.
And that's one thing. And then another thing is, I'm sure you're familiar, we also want to call, we call on governments regionally, to replicate CEDAW, UN Convention of Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. So that's about the particular advocacy activities that we want to focus on.
Now, are you aware of any of the faith organizations themselves now at a, let's say, faith-based level that mm-hmm. actually also take on, say, the same issues? So, for
mm-hmm.
example,
yes.
if it's for the yes. church or the Buddhist, there's an overarching Buddhist movement, do they also
yes.
support the same things?
Yes, that's right. I'm sure you've heard of Religions for Peace?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, there is it's called WCRP, World Conference of Religions for Peace, and it has what membership throughout the world. And I'm also a member of that Religions for Peace Japan in the Women's Executive Committee, as well as Peace Research and Peace Education Task Force. And I also do similar activities with that group.
Yeah, this is very critical because when we look at the Sustainable Development Goals to move to
mm-hmm.
the future in 2030, some of the issues around which we think conflict might break out are going to be water, for sure.
I know, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's really a big concern, yeah.
Exactly. Another area where conflict might break out is because of climate change, if people move into other people's areas.
Exactly.
So as you think about what is coming in your mm-hmm. program at the university and
yeah.
with possibly what you can do through
mm-hmm.
your different connections,
mm-hmm.
how do you think women in the faith community can, let's say, begin to amplify whatever learnings we have made so far in
mm-hmm.
preventing conflict from breaking out?
I know it's really challenging, and I know that the SDGs are sort of like post development goals to the Millennium Goals.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
And I also have a background of being a board chair of Oxfam International Japan, and so I really know how difficult and challenging it is to meet these goals. Although there are a lot of goals that has been met, but I really feel that the change of climate, as you say, and also unpredictable violent conflicts can happen. So I feel that it's important now to form, it might be the same answer, but to form collaboration links with women with the same mind, and work as a team to raise their voice. I think the key word is to continue our efforts and action and have patience in doing this. And we just have to hang on and do it.
Well, I guess I'm trying to get to a more specific action that you're saying you're calling on us to know. For example, if I'm going to leave this conversation and speak to a woman in
sure.
another country about what are some specific ideas or tools
mm-hmm.
to promote peace, to promote the faith community. For example, I myself go to an interfaith chapel. So in my chapel,
mm-hmm.
I sit with people who come from different faith backgrounds and we're in the same house of worship. That's very unusual. So
mm-hmm.
if
mm-hmm.
we're to talk about the promotion of peace,
mm-hmm.
what are some key lessons that you have learned in terms of education or training or
yes.
that, that myself need to be thinking about?
Sure, sure. I think education is very important. I'm a peace educator myself, and I do a lot of activities and facilitate workshops to find to teach. I mean, you know, to help people discover that they have an alternative choice to violent conflicts, and that's what I do. And it really changes the attitude of the people towards peace. So I would say that I need to continue on with this, with these activities through various ways to work as a peace educator. And also, I would say advocacy and funding activities are also very important.
Yes, but what I'm hearing you say then is that as an educator, which you do both in your, let's say, whatever spare time you have, because I don't know how you have any spare time, but the educator training people, and I like that term, training people in a choice. You're saying this actually begins on a one by case by case basis? Is that what you're saying?
You see, I do a lot of, like, for example, there's a group of people that I work with to come up with Northeast Asian peace building called NARPI, Northeast Asia Regional Peace Building Institute. And we get together, the Chinese, the people of different faiths and people from different traditions will come together and do this training, and then they come up with very collaborative ideas. So this is something that we need to continue on.
So then basically I'm hearing then that a formidable task ahead then to head off potential conflicts is increase the number of opportunities to have people around the world train peace management, peace prevention.
Exactly.
So then to come back to the International Association, as you begin to rethink how you will rebuild the strength and the voice for the future, what are the specific, perhaps, initiatives you might take on to promote a conflict-free 2030?
Right. Very important goal. Well, I guess we need, you see, whenever we have our conference, we always come up with a declaration of peace. So we just need to continue on with that. And we meet once in 4 years, and there we sort of exchange our activities, what we have done in our areas, and then to work from there on as well. And we keep on adding our developments and activities.
I guess my question is, if you are meeting once every 4 years,
right,
and you have a declaration of peace, between now and your next meeting, what are some concrete things that you are saying you're going to be doing as a group to advance the cause?
Oh, I see. Oh, for example, we have come up with a declaration stating how we should sensitize ourselves, and so we put our strength on support for groups who really believe in or who are suffering from persecution of their religion. We also focus on education, as I mentioned earlier, not just basic literacy, but also peaceful means, learning peaceful means to resolve conflict. Also, we focus on support for sustainable livelihoods. We actually do support certain groups in northern India, et cetera. We also work for prevention of environmental degradation, as well. We have activities, for example, to stop desertification in Africa, etc.
Now, again, to come back to the issue of peace then, so when was your last big conference?
Last year in Birmingham.
You won't be having another conference for the next 3 years.
Exactly. And we might have an in-between conference in Malaysia, where our new president is stationed, yeah.
So do you have any targets in terms of growing the organization, any special programs that you launched last year to begin to revitalize your organization?
Because we have had, right now, our particular activity is to write letters to the prime ministers of Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh about women being attacked violently there, raped, and, you know, So right now, our particular interest is to write a letter to these prime ministers to make sure that these things would be handled and prevented.
So how do you kind of get your message out to a broader group so that you can get more support from the base?
We're sending out this to various organizations, not just ours, to have them sign up and present it.
Okay. Mm. Now, this conference, it's an interfaith conference. Is there any conversation? Is there any conversation among the people present about how different states deal with the issue of peace, or is that not a table at all?
I see. We think that coming together and having discussions and exchanges together will make a big difference.
Yes.
Also, going back to another group that I'm also involved in, the Religions for Peace, I think the main theme is welcoming the other. And how are we going to overcome our faith differences and what's the conflicts that's going on in the world? Yeah.
Now, with this current challenge we're having right now, which seems to be increasing, with the Muslim groups that have become increasingly intolerant of others, how does a group like yours play a part in maybe, again, working with grassroots women in the pews, women in the actual faith, that maybe influence their children or whomever? How do you see yourself really taking all the lessons you have learned? Because you have been doing this for so long.
Yes. We especially feel that we need to focus on home education, family education.
Yes.
And because everything starts with a home, and I think it's the women that can do it.
So, for example, in the case of the, I would say, whether it's Hindu religion, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, are you then developing training programs that you, when you come to your trainings, you're teaching other women who are in their faith community how to have a conversation about peace and the lack of conflict? Is that what you...
Our main goal is to have a more humane society. So these values need to be nourished, I think, at home, in that sense. So
my question is, if the organization is trying to teach peace and the values are nourished at home, my question is, when you have these trainings, are you training other religious women leaders to go back into their churches and temples and mosques?
Exactly.
Is that what you're doing?
Exactly. IALRW is not that active in that area yet, but Women for Religions for Peace are actually doing that.
Okay.
Yeah,
and you're
because it is a bigger organization, and they have their own, EDs, they have their own directors and secretariat, whereas IALW is really made of volunteers, and we really need to strengthen that part. But
we also
support these activities with Religions for Peace.
Okay, again, if you have a particular lessons that you have learned, you can just teach them and they can go and teach your members without having to reinvent
the wheel.
If you don't have a lot of time. I think with what's coming down the pike in the next 10 years, there's not a lot of time to make the change that necessary. So I have another last question to sum up.
Sure.
What is, you think about the work that you're doing across the religious boundaries, because you're doing it in so many different places.
Mm-hmm.
What is a successful vision for 2030 that you would like to see? Can you paint a picture for me of something that you think is happening as a result of what you and your colleagues in the faith community working on peace issues, whether it be, you know, the women's organization or the Religious Women for Peace? How do you want to see 2030 turn out?
That's a very good question. I think that women, by 2030, hopefully, women has achieved a world where I think every life is respected and nurtured. Binding with Eleanor Roosevelt's words, you know, that women not only talked about peace, nor did they only believe in it, but they really worked at it, you know. And I want the history of women being painted that way. I really strongly believe that my mission as woman and educator, as women that gave life to future generation, and as peace educator to build the defenses of peace as written in the UNESCO Charter in our minds, and save future generation as written in the United Nations preamble from the scourges of war. And I believe and I strongly want to work for it, and I want to see that happen.
But I'm going to push you a little bit on this, because as a futurist, we really like people to be more specific, because when you get a picture of that sort, which is kind of just out there floating, it's very hard for people to actually believe it's possible. So I'm going to ask you the question a different way, right?
Okay.
And see if you can bring it down to something that's actually perhaps achievable.
Okay.
You are now teaching global citizenship to a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
You're also teaching peace studies or peace training.
Mm-hmm.
How do you envision the teaching of global citizenship and the teaching of peace studies changing and improving and increasing in the next 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to see with that?
Okay. I'd like to see that the governments will find ways to resolve these conflict issues in a nonviolent way, that I hope that they would put human security in complement with the state security.
No, but it's, again, Kathy, you're going back to the governments. You are teaching in a university. So I'm asking you to think about something that's within your control. The governments are not in your control. You are in several organizations that you have a leadership function in.
Right.
And I do believe the work that you're doing is very critical. So as a visionary, because you have a vision, but I'm asking you to probably articulate it in a way that can be shared that you've never done this.
I guess what I always tell my students is that they are responsible for the kind of society that they want to live in. So I just want everyone to know what is needed, what their choices are, and what kind of strengths that they have as citizens,
and
nationally
how,
and globally.
And how do you propose to expand the work you're doing at CSUN? Can you get other universities in Japan to take up this kind of work?
Yes, yes. we can work together and form a collaboration. I actually go out to other universities to do lectures as well and workshops. So I think I'd like to continue doing that.
Yes. And hopefully out of that, we can build a network of universities that actually do this kind of training.
Great, great. Yes, and we also share that kind of training internationally at what we call a conference called International Institute of Peace Education that will be held this year in Toledo.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And where will that be? And where will that be?
Toledo. Toledo, what is the state? But if you can check IIPE,
yes,
you'll get information.
Mm. Okay. So this is very good information. So thank you so much, because you're saying, if I might rephrase you, you're saying then that there is indeed a network of people working hard on the ground,
right,
to know what you're doing, to begin, yes, to try and create a culture of peace.
Yes.
And that through your work as a global citizenship,
mm-hmm,
professional, the lessons that you're learning, you're passing on to,
mm-hmm,
other teachers you do at other universities. And may I put words in your mouth, and also hopefully helping to mentor other,
mm-hmm,
people, courses and centers at their universities, because that would make a tremendous difference.
Oh, thank you. You worded it beautifully. Thank you.
I know. You have to think in two or three languages, and I'm only thinking in one. So I understand. This is really have been very interesting. You really are a member of the people who bring light to our planet. Your work as a peace trainer, as a,
mm-hmm,
peace, the,
mm-hmm,
peace center. I think,
yeah,
it's just so awesome the work you're doing, and I really hope that perhaps with the technology that's available, Sisson University and your work can be made,
okay,
more available to others around the world online, you know, because we wait for you to travel to every country and spread this information. So I'm hoping that perhaps your center, you know, could consider, you know,
mm-hmm,
maybe putting some sort of an online exchange that,
mm-hmm,
this information can get out to a much broader audience, because we really, 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 really need it.
Thank you. Yes. And thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Yes. So I want to thank Professor Matsui for sharing her insights. We have been listening to an interview with Dr. Kathy Matsui, a professor at Sensen University, Seisen University in Tokyo, Japan. She's also a member of several peace organizations internationally and the former president of the International Association of Liberal Religious Women, a 100-year-old organization striving to bring an interfaith dialogue around women and peace and social and economic justice. Thank you for listening to this episode of Voice in History, The Futures of Women. And remember, as I sign off, it is better to be a parent of your future than the offspring of your past.